You're listening to Reality Sandwich Radio, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, spirit, and our planet, community, and economy. To learn more about the Healthful Living model, go to healthfulliving.org. Reality Sandwich is hosted by Julie Matthews, Certified Nutrition Consultant, and Martin Matthews, Certified Medical Hypnotherapist. Past episodes of Reality Sandwich are available for free download at realitysandwichradio.com. Thanks for listening. You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, the body, and our planet, all the areas of the Healthful Living model. You can read more about that at healthfulliving.org. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified medical hypnotherapist and healthful living advocate, and I'm here in the studio today with one of our Reality Sandwich co-hosts, welcoming back from a journey around the country. He's been out on a train, spreading the word, talking about peak oil, energy, issues of sustainability. He's been out playing his guitar, rounding up audiences, and speaking about truth in the world. Welcome back to the studio, Jan Lundberg.
Martin, are you having a global warming day?
You know, I was just thinking about that because you had commented to me before we went on the air just now that, today's one of those summer days here in San Francisco. It's warm. We typically get this kind of weather around here this time of year. How do we know if it's a global warming day? I mean, everyone's talking about it, right? It's out. The Al Gore movie's been out there. There's been much more attention now to global warming. And unfortunately, when things get a lot of press, two things happen. Number one, a lot of people wake up and say, hey, wait a minute, maybe this is something we should be paying more attention to. And then there's others who go, ah, clearly it's BS because it's getting all this popularity, there's really nothing going on. And I hear people say things like, oh, maybe this is happening because of global warming, maybe it's hot today. How do we sift through some of that?
Well, the thing to understand about climate change is that there are more extremes, and we don't know things day to day, but studies have been made, such as on the increased frequency of strong hurricanes, and it has been found that they are a function of the warmer seawater, and this wouldn't be happening without human influence on the climate through fossil fuels and deforestation.
So there's definitely something going on.
That's right. What's that sound?
Sure. Jan Lundberg, for those of you who haven't been familiar with Jan before, is the founder and editor of culturechange.org, and he has just a tremendous amount of information there about climate change, about peak oil issues, about global sustainability issues. His most recent article that I think was just out yesterday is titled False Leadership, False Security, False Hope, Understanding Climate Change Solutions, Unity. Can you tell us a little bit about the most recent article, Jan?
Yes. I took the chance to look inside of me as to what I feel hitting me and many of us about the falseness of leadership, of everything from convenience to glamour to security, aspects of our lives that we're expected to accept as the price of a modern nation with a lot of power and material wealth. But as soon as you start to look underneath the surface, there are a lot of contradictions and weaknesses and double standards and hypocrisies. But it goes beyond our borders. And one of the things I point out early on in this report is that instead of this being a problem of George Bush, we're looking at Hugo Chavez of Venezuela as another global warmer. He's not only maximizing petroleum extraction and sales, but engaging in mountaintop removal in Venezuela.
Mm.
And dissent on environmental issues and on the energy policy there is not tolerated well. People have been to Venezuela and seen this, experienced it. But this isn't to say that there aren't some nice programs that Chavez has instituted to help poor people. Some of them sound very innovative. We're looking at a huge overpopulation in Caracas, just like many other cities around the world. So many people, they need to survive. They have to eat and get water thanks to the wonders of petroleum.
Mm-hmm.
How can this go on? Well, one way is to just try to keep it going and see how long we can maintain 6.5 people, 6.5 billion people on the planet. But it's smart for us to start looking beyond when this huge fossil fuel consumption party will be over. And I think that's one of the things we've been doing on the show, Martin.
It is one of the things we've been doing on the show. In fact, we're a bit proud here at Reality Sandwich. We've been talking about this for, boy, at least 3 years now. This topic of peak oil, and simply stated, if those of listeners aren't familiar with this, you can hear past shows of Reality Sandwich at realitysandwichradio.com, past episodes with Jan and myself and other guests discussing this topic of peak oil, which essentially is just that Jan was speaking about. I mean, we do have 6.5 billion people, humans, living on this planet, and we have become inexorably tied to the extraction of cheap petroleum as an energy source out of the ground in order to operate our vehicles, in order to make pesticides, to grow our foods, and literally thousands of other applications that most of us really had no idea actually came from petroleum, including a lot of the stuff that we're eating. So our sheer existence has become so tied to the continuation of our ability to pull this product out of the ground and to refine it and make all this lovely stuff out of it. And now we're reaching a point globally, as predicted by Hubbard back in the 70s and many other analysts, that eventually we're going to reach a point where we've pulled so much out of the ground that we can cheaply in order to produce things for the cost that we have, and get to a point where we reach a peak where we're now heading down the other side, meaning that we're now heading towards the end of what's there. I don't know if I'm explaining it exactly right, but that means that we really have to face the reality that things are not permanent, and we have set up our way of life assuming that things will just simply continue.
And something going along at the same time has been the accumulation of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, creating climate change. And to a lot of us looking at peak oil and climate change, it's coming down to a race between, is it going to be climate collapse,
mm-hmm,
or petrol collapse first?
Right.
So those are huge issues that touch all of us. So it doesn't matter what your politics are, whether you like to consume as much as you can, or you like to live simply and sustainably, we're all going to be terribly affected by this. We're also eventually going to be affected positively by the collapse of a system which is based on the opposite of community,
mm-hmm,
of sharing, of sustainable living, of recognizing the rights of other species to exist and to continue evolving. And that's why we look at culture change as not just what's going on today, but an outcome and a source of hope.
I'm seeing how much more tied these issues are to one another, peak oil, the global oil issue, and, of course, global warming. Because for anyone who takes this position, and I've had some of these discussions recently, those who counter the peak oil notion and saying that, oh, there's plenty of oil, there's new discoveries, there is no scarcity, and we'll be able to continue burning fossil fuels indefinitely. Well, then you have to stop the conversation and go, well, fine that you have that opinion, but can the planet handle that? I mean, look at where we are today with respect to the indisputable evidence of climate change around the globe, and to say, well, shouldn't that alone be one to have us voluntarily seek to cease are burning of fossil fuels.
Right, and also biodiesel and ethanol. Mm-hmm. What good is biofuels as some kind of a greener substitute for fossil fuels if you still have to burn the stuff and you have carbon dioxide emissions?
Mm-hmm.
It goes to the same question of the superiority of natural gas over oil and coal for less carbon dioxide emissions. It's still there. It still happens. So are we in a position where we have the time to decrease gradually greenhouse emissions, or is it time to slash them and begin living a new way? I think you know how I feel about it. But I wanted to get back to the subject of peak, since you did state an understanding of peak oil, which is true. But I wanted to add that when we have the oil market basically taking control of the supply situation, as soon as the effects of peak really begin to manifest themselves, the effect will be like a complete virtual shortage, no matter how much oil is left in the ground. Because when you have skyrocketing prices and there's supply tightness that is felt, and you have people hoarding fuels, this will send things into a chaotic tizzy of shortage and everything that goes with it. People will not be able to drive to work. There will be other petroleum shortages as well. If the trucks aren't coming into Safeway and Walmart and places where people frequent for their daily needs, what does this mean?
Mm-hmm.
Does this mean that we simply will be able to stop going to work for a while and not shop, and we'll just eat out of our gardens and go to the local well for water? Well, it's not working that way anymore. It hasn't been for some time in high-populated modern societies. So what have we built, and how are we going to get by this historic phenomenon of peak oil, which I equate with petrol collapse?
Many people that are listening now that really can't quite get it into their minds, this notion of there being no fuel for the trucks to bring the food, this type of thing. Let's just talk about what's going on right now. I want to kind of just bring it back to what's happening, in your opinion, what you're seeing around the globe right now, because we just went through a time, midsummer, prices just took off. I mean, we're talking, you know, $3.50 or so a gallon. Prices went up. There was this big issue with the Alaska pipeline going down, and mainstream media coverage about the significant amounts of shortages to the global oil supply. Right? I think I saw some pretty mainstream coverage about the fact that the global supply of oil is so right up there next to the global demand for it right now. Issues we've been talking about here. And so it seemed to be, you know, sneaking out into the mainstream, yet next thing we know, we've got Chevron talking about, oh, we have a huge new oil discovery in the Gulf. We can go down deeper. There's going to be plenty. Yet, from my understanding, some of the other hard realities that we've talked about, the fact that there hasn't, you know, there's been no real oil infrastructure built in quite a long time, no new refineries, I think. And so how do we make sense of this? And especially now that, you know, prices are dropping again and everything's beginning to look like, oh, it's okay. All that peak oil talk is all a bunch of hullabaloo.
Well, unfortunately, this is the question of the hour. We should not be hung up on, you know, transient developments and blips on the screen as we move along in time here. The bigger picture is that the peaking of global oil extraction is inescapable. Any one big discovery does not change the basic trend. That's one thing. But to focus further on the Chevron discovery, that will take many years for that to come online to really be a part of supply. And the other issue is it's so deep and so costly and energy intensive to do this kind of drilling compared to what the oil industry was able to do decades ago, and even longer ago, put a stick in the ground and you had a gusher. This mm-hmm. These days are gone. That's the cheap petroleum. So folks out there who don't know much about energy or might need to be open to the idea that maybe they don't know as much as they think they know about energy. People need to understand the idea of net energy, and I'm referring to the amount of energy that has to go into an extractive process. So decades ago in this country, one barrel of oil equivalent would get you 100 back. Now that is cheap oil. Those days are gone, never coming back. And if on average new wells are taking as much energy to put into them as you get out of them, that's a one-to-one energy profit ratio.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really about money or about whether the oil's there or not. If you don't have a reasonable energy return trade-off, then that's the big question. And we apply that to other forms of energy and other technologies. They don't look so good, Martin. So the days of cheap energy are fast fading. There is no substitute out there for petroleum. Not only do they have do other substitutes have poor energy return, they don't have the flexibility and versatility of petroleum. Like wind power, you're not going to get plastic bags out of wind power, but you get plastic bags out of natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
The list goes on.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to ask you again about Colorado, because that's also been in the mainstream. Canada, the oil sands, that's also been fairly mainstream, and several people that have been throwing that at me recently. Oh, I heard about the Canada tar sands. Plenty of oil up there. They say there's a 400-year supply. What's the scoop on that?
Well, it is a scoop. It's mining. You have to dig up this solid substance. It's not oil. It used to be called tar sands, and now they're trying to call it oil sands.
Mm-hmm.
But it requires a tremendous amount of natural gas to power the whole operation and to cook the stuff down so you can get an oil out of it, and massive environmental damage and water pollution for this all to be done. And if you look at the big picture, supply-wise, we're using about 85 million barrels a day of oil in the world. At best, there's going to be maybe 2 million barrels a day coming out of the tar sands if industry can really maximize investment and development there. So let us forget about the idea of keeping this party going. And to quote the Republican Congressman Roscoe Bartlett, he says that we have been pigging out. The U.S. has been pigging out as a nation energy-wise, and for us to try to bridge the gap, to try to keep the party going, is intending to pig out further.
Mm-hmm.
So it is time for us to think about how we can get by without the energy. We need to question what the energy would be for to build nuclear power plants or coal-fired power plants, and how we can live in a way that may protect the climate and that actually will save us money, provide us greater freedom, and will bring communities closer together.
What are you seeing now on the global scale? I just had a great question and then I lost it, so I apologize for that, but I'm wanting to kind of grasp what's going on right now with respect to global oil production. I ran into a gentleman last week who couldn't be on the show with us because of the nature of his work, but he's in the oil industry and apparently having to do with understanding global oil production, and was touting to me how there's all this new stuff coming online and all kinds of production and all kinds of huge numbers and everybody's pumping and everything's going on. And whenever I mentioned anything that I had been hearing about with respect to declining productions of Ghawar, the big oil field in Saudi Arabia, or significantly dropping off productions in the North Seas up in Norway, I believe it is.
Between Norway and Britain.
Yeah. And it reports that I've been reading that, you know, production there has significantly dropped off, as predicted. He says, no, not the case. So I know you've been out there. I know you've been organizing petro-collapse conferences, and I want to ask you a little bit more about that in just a moment. But what are you seeing as far as these global production figures,
well,
and supply and demand?
When projections are made on continuing oil extraction, rising and accommodating growing economy. Let's look at some of the assumptions involved there. The United States Department of Energy, Energy Information Administration, says that the peak in global oil extraction won't be for another couple of decades. They base that on demand productions. Demand production. So basically, we want the oil, we'll want it more, therefore there will be more. That's the logic at play. But as to specifics on this oil industry person's belief that there would be more and more oil, they base it on improved technology to get more oil out of the ground, to discover more. This is a game that is not proving to be productive. There just isn't as much oil to come out of the ground as easily, so more energy is used. Fewer and fewer fields are discovered. More and more of the wells drilled are dry. So you can look at Cambridge Energy Research Associates and look at very rosy ideas on future supply. However, they've been dead wrong in the past, for example, about natural gas. It sort of depends on who you talk to. But overall, we should remember some basics that are incontrovertible. For every oil, for every barrel of oil discovered, we're using about four. And if you look at the peak in oil discoveries in the U.S., in the early 1930s, and our peak in oil extraction was around 1970. If you look at the world situation and realize that the world peaked in discoveries around 1964, that would be about the same pattern for us to be hitting peak in production right about now. So whether there is a little more time for us to really hit peak and then start the descent, or whether it's now, this should not be the question. The question is, we're destroying the climate. We are going to be faced with immense shortage, not when everything is run out, but as soon as the gap between supply and demand is felt and the system of economic growth and frenetic industrial activity and consumption hit a snag and trip and fall, because that's what we're setting ourselves up for.
Mm-hmm. There does seem to be a lot of denial out there, and it's a very difficult issue to face, as there are many to face with respect to what's really going on in our collective co-created world. Hence the title of our show, Reality Sandwich, where we do our best to talk about our understanding of what's actually going on here, even though they're difficult topics, just to get them out in some way into the human consciousness in some regard. And denial is huge. People don't want to know this is going on. I mean, you talk about the end of the age of oil and returning to some other world. We don't know of any other world. I don't know of any other world in my lifetime. So it's so clear and easy for me, or really anyone, to not want to acknowledge what's happening here. So it feels to me, I'm just giving you my own commentary, a bit of a struggle, because I'm taking in all this information, and then I look around, and it seems like the world is behaving as if there's something going on, and all these countries that are burning up oil as fast as they can, it's like, you know, it's running out, and I'm going to burn up whatever I can as much as I can and further myself as fast as possible. And I don't sense...
We're doing that individually, too. Say, well, there's these problems, and because of them, I've got to get mine right mm-hmm. now. Maybe I'll save myself by having more wealth, more land,
right.
more oil, and it's every dog for himself.
Which is, as many of us know, really the antithetical behavior to, well, again, it's all a matter of judgments and beliefs as far as where you are on the spectrum of believing that we are all connected to one another and to all things in one way or another, and We can have a whole different show on spiritual beliefs with regard to that.
Wait a minute. We can look at the human history. We evolved as tribal people. We lived within our ecological limits. We had stable population for millennia.
Mm-hmm.
Our whole evolution and our time as modern humans has been without population growth, economic growth, changing the climate. And it is only in the last 10,000 years that this particular civilization has been growing, getting out of control, and bringing everything to a head. But our human nature and our history as a species has been actually rather sustainable. And if we look at the principles and value systems of that kind of existence, which was closer to the land and maintaining traditions and living within our natural limits, and as you say, a spiritual connection, this is something that has to return and will, whether we like it or not, if we're to have another chance at getting along together, especially in a resource-stripped, decaying world.
You're listening to 89.5 KPOO. This is Reality Sandwich. We're on today with oil industry expert and editor of culturechange.org, Jan Lundberg, talking about peak oil, global climate change, and I'm going to ask now about the Petro Collapse Conference. I think the last one you organized was back in May, back in late spring, and that was in Washington, yeah?
Yes, we had a good array of speakers, and the idea was to bring the issue right to the steps of the halls of power. There's been very little discussion of peak oil in the Washington Post. The Washington Post seems to think that it determines the news rather than provides the news. And this is true with corporate media in general. I've been asked by some mainstream news organizations in the past, will I talk about oil supply on the air? Will I write a column about energy conservation? And pretty soon the discussion gets around to what they believe needs to be said. And if that isn't the message that you have to provide, they say, well, we'll think we'll get somebody else who will say that. So they're sort of writing the news in advance, and they'll get a talking head to appear and, you know, fill in the blank. So it's up to people to make the news, because following the news, you could be misled by whatever agenda the industrial state is serving up.
Well, I think we're learning a lot of that. What kind of things were you talking about that they didn't want you to talk about?
Well, peak oil is not a matter of debate, although you can't even get to debating peak oil in most mainstream media forums. So when we title a conference Petro Collapse, we're getting beyond the debate about peak oil. We're getting to the effects of peak oil. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the process of the market, the oil market, taking things to a very dangerous level of exacerbated shortage. And we talk about ways to mitigate this. And it's great that San Francisco has officially recognized that peak oil is a reality and that we have to address it. And there will be hearings that the city will conduct on how to deal with it. And if people are ready to cope with a world right up ahead without the cheap energy and materials from petroleum and all the things connected to petroleum, like water running out of your tap, because pumps do take energy, then people can start to prepare responses and get together as families and neighbors and communities to cope with a terrible energy crunch right up ahead. And one way to deal with that would be rooftop gardens and depaving and growing food more locally. And that used to be sort of a fringe idea that we were promoting over the years. But nowadays, Matthew Simmons of Simmons & Company International, the huge energy investment banking company, his message on peak oil at his presentations is, grow food at home.
Mm.
So it sort of comes down to the reality of what petroleum means to us and the threat that petroleum dependence offers. So let's say you're renting an apartment or a house in San Francisco, and you want to grow food on the roof. And the landlord says, no, you go up on the roof, you'll be evicted. Or, no, you can't change anything about the landscaping here. We're just going to have these simple, you know, stones out there, and there's some grass, and don't touch it, or you're out of here. Well, now that the city has stated that peak oil is a very high priority to look at and deal with,
mm-hmm.
then it seems to me it would be a defense for any tenant threatened by a landlord with eviction to say, well, this is something that needed to be done, and so I didn't think I had to ask the landlord, or maybe the landlord wasn't cooperative, but landlords have done such things as put barbed wire on roofs. Well, instead of that, maybe they should put railing so it's safe to be up there and people can get some rooftop gardens going.
Right.
There's got to be rain catchment, too, because pumping the water up a significant altitude is going to be quite questionable.
Right. What do we say to the people that I know are listening right now that are going, oh, come on, this is not going to happen. I mean, this is rooftop gardens, oil, everything's going to be fine.
Well, there's let's take Cuba, for example.
Okay.
Now, Cuba lost its Soviet oil in
right.
the early 90s. This was an economic crash for them. They had massive unemployment. They lost their energy, their agricultural chemicals from petroleum that the Soviet Union had been providing. So they had to do something. They weren't going to get any help from the United States. Well, what they did was come together as a community, and as neighborhoods in community. And transportation-wise, they had to go to the bicycle. And they devised special kinds of buses that kind of look like trucks with, you know, semi-trailers. These brought more people along to their destinations, carrying bikes as well. Work bikes were devised. And regarding food production, they maximized urban gardening,
mm-hmm.
community farms right in the cities. And in Havana to this day, over half the food supply is created right there in town.
Really?
For 2.2 million people.
Mm.
And that was their response to petrocollapse. There's a very fine movie out called The Power of Community, How Cuba Survived Peak Oil. And that's one of the documentaries I show at our conferences and when I'm hired to go out and speak on peak oil.
Has San Francisco taken any action at all, as far as you know, after the resolution of several months ago? Has there been any subsequent mention of peak oil anywhere in the city government?
Well, I only moved here recently, returning to the Bay Area, so I don't know, but peak oil meetings are being held by citizens regularly. I just went to one last night in the East Bay, and that's at the Rock Ridge Library, third Wednesday of every month at 7 o'clock. And there are other such organizing groups and discussion groups. San Francisco, of course, has one. And people can find out about those and go there learn more and get some, personal, emotional support in learning about all this, because sometimes people are a little freaked out about learning of the full implications of peak oil. But as to what San Francisco is doing, hearings are starting up. It's a very big issue. It's a big city. There's going to be bureaucracy involved. But it really comes down to individuals taking action. You can't wait for government whether it's city, national, state.
Well, let's talk about that for a little bit. Huge subjects that that hit the public eye or the ear, and we get really annoyed and very frustrated. And the easiest thing to do is just simply say, hey, we're going to yell and scream and expect the government to change things. Right? There's a lot of that energy going on out there in the world. People angry at the government and hoping, holding out hope that that system is going to somehow change and right itself and everything will be wonderful in the world. When we keep drilling to the subject here on our show and everything that we do, that, you know, the information simply needs to inform us as a single individual, and it's only we ourselves that have the ability to affect our own behavior as, you know, one person out of millions, and that's where large-scale change will begin. So you were mentioning in your recent article some tips and pointers directly to the individual about guiding their own behavior when they start taking in this knowledge, they start realizing they're part of, you know, this bigger scheme. How does the individual respond to all of this? What can the individual do without, you know, let's fray away from the, you know, radical change, because not everyone's going to, you know, ditch their car tomorrow and walk everywhere or ride a bike. But how do we begin to, you know, bring this mindset in and affect our everyday behavior, in your opinion?
Well, that's a major issue. And some folks will become aware of a problem and simply refuse or delay taking any personal action in it. But we're not all the same. Some people are and have been taking action that addresses the reality of climate change, peak oil, and other related crises. Individually, there are many, many things to do, and we're very powerful as individuals, and collectively, we're much more powerful. How this begins to really get going and take hold really is influenced, unfortunately, by the convenience of the petroleum that's still out there. And in our society, we're brainwashed to believe that if we have money, this solves everything,
mm-hmm.
and that we can just buy our way out of things, or if we don't have money, then we're cooked. We're just, you know, not able to do anything, and that we give up and wait for someone to give us some money. Or so, really, looking at our own choices, this can empower us greatly. And when we spread the word about that and get other people involved and join each other in projects to, for example, do some local community gardening, this is very empowering, and it's also fun. It tastes good to eat fresh food. It's great to save money. It's great to get exercise, meet people. So all these are possible. But the list of changes that we need to make to live sustainably is very long. And the opportunity for change and to get by in our neighborhoods in ways that we're currently not forced to be doing. Anticipating this and bringing it about sooner rather than later is it's quite an enjoyable sport. And there are a lot of people interested in this and actually pursuing it. There are gardening helpers that are going around the city helping people to plant their gardens,
mm-hmm.
To understand permaculture,
mm-hmm.
and start growing a little of their own food, even if it's a small demonstration plot. So there are things people are doing to improve their own lives and to spread the word. And when something can catch on as a movement, this can be very powerful. It's sort of hard to gauge sometimes how much progress is going on in that regard, because it's certainly not the priority of the mainstream corporate media,
sure.
to tell us about this. They're selling cars. They're giving us very fragmented pictures of reality, as if everything is disjointed. Oh, here's a picture of a shark. Oh, and here's a story about people being unemployed in the auto industry. And what does it all mean? It's really pseudo news that we're being fed. And when it comes to education, we're just not given the skills to really survive or to maintain traditions that have always worked to keep people together and help them get by.
Right, right. This is really one of the big subjects of the show, is that there's so many areas of our world where what we're seeing and what we're being told in the mainstream media is simply not real anymore, simply not true anymore. And in all areas of the healthful living model, whether we look at the earth or the health of our mind, our bodies, so much reality showing up that's distasteful that we don't want to know about. You know, obesity rates or cancer rates, all these things that we look at our collective health and go, gee, how healthy are we? Well, we're not doing very well. Life, human life, isn't really doing very well. We're failing in so many regards. But nobody wants to really know and accept the pain of how bad things are, because then we have to acknowledge that we played some role in that.
Well, I wouldn't say nobody wants to know, but you're right. There's a tendency for people not to want to know. But since we don't always know what people are going to accept or act on, we just keep trying, and we burst some bubbles along the way. This can be very healthy, and people can start to take action. When it comes to the toxicity, the cancer, the obesity, how people are less healthy, this is something that we can look at in our lives and get some information out there that'll really help. And it's rather interesting to know that government leaders that have green images who were voted into office are undermining our health to please their industry friends.
Mm-hmm.
We've had the city turning its back on grassroots and government employee efforts to bring about a bag fee on plastics. It was almost a done deal. Many thought that there would be like a 20-cent fee on plastic bags given away at supermarket checkout counters in San Francisco.
Right.
This was scuttled by the mayor. Some ameliorative policies have been adopted in the meantime that may cut down on the waste of bags and the pollution of the environment. But that was very disappointing. And statewide, last week, the governor has signed a law banning cities from adopting any bag fees.
Oh, my God.
So
Schwarzenegger did this?
Yes. Anti-plastics campaigning has been making some headway. And when you see the politicians, which are really the mouthpieces for polluting industry, take this kind of action against cities, well, they're as exposed right there for us all to see that we really don't have the rights that we're told that we have when it comes to state rights, that when states' mm-hmm. rights are violated or stepped on. So, you know, is that a conservative value being upheld? So it's all very questionable. So in the meantime, when we have these obstacles from industry, from corporate media, we simply have to take action on our own and continue to grow this movement and see how it will play out later on to overcome this resistance, which will fail in the end, but it's just making it harder for us all now.
But the strong point to remember here is that where people do have an ability to affect something is in their own personal action, and where they spend their money and what they choose to support in any particular day of their lives. And we continue to try to bring attention, simply just bring some awareness to our role in the continuation of things that we don't like. And whether we believe it or not, we are playing some role. And I keep using the Starbucks example, and I don't mean to overly vilify them, but it's just a good example as far as understanding, you know, if you spend your $4 for a coffee at Starbucks, where is that money going and who are you supporting and what are you being a part of?
Right.
We've had great shows in the past. We had a great show with Catherine Austin Fitz talking about green investing and people who blindly jump into mutual funds that their broker told them was a conscious fund or whatever, and they realize they're holding stock in companies like ConAgra or whatever, and they don't know themselves that while they are making a choice to go out and buy healthier foods or shop at local stores, they've got a retirement account that's banking on these big companies that are doing the stuff that they don't like in the world being more successful at that. So just being aware of our own little alignments between our behavior and where we're spending our money and what we're doing on a daily basis and the role that we're playing in the continuation of larger systems and larger processes that typically we're completely disconnected with, right? Because we don't normally think about how our, you know, my jumping in my car to go downtown for 5 minutes is involved in the bigger picture. But I think just by talking about this more, bringing more attention to that, getting it more into people's minds, that with the increasing collective discontent that must be happening in the world to some regard, the more that reality shows up. Again, these are my theories. The more that reality shows up, sneaking out of the carpet, incidences of, you know, Schwarzenegger doing this, people hearing things like this, little pieces add up and up and over time. I don't personally feel that the collective consciousness can suppress so much data that's just bursting out all over the place. And I don't know what's going to happen, whether it's this month, next year, eventually, when topics of, you know, the peak oil issue hits the mainstream economy or something breaks.
Yeah, when things are bottled up, eventually the pressure will explode. And it may be on a number of fronts because it does seem to be all related.
I'm feeling the bottling. Are you?
I yes,
mean, are you feeling that we're going forward now in time? It's been several months since you and I have chatted, and the world goes on, and all these issues continue, and all this stuff happens, and more people shove it under the rug, and more atrocities, and more calling for impeachment of the president, and more nothing happening, and more this, and more that, and now we're approaching the tail end of 2006, going what's going on here? What do you see over the next short while with the peak oil issue? Is it going to continue to vacillate for a bit, or is something coming?
Well, a number of factors have been at play to allow for our continued orgy of massive petroleum consumption and for a shortage to be staved off. A lesser hurricane season was one reason. But if we also look at the pressures that are there all the time making sure that our petroleum consumption is very high and that there is not wiggle room for extra capacity just to take up the slack to allow for, endless consuming, there are flashpoints that are just ready to appear here and there. Something politically could happen in Saudi Arabia tomorrow. There could be some other kind of event that, combined with another one, will create a very serious shortage. And as we get into the winter in the Northern Hemisphere, this is the prime oil consumption period for the world because of heating oil, not so much in the United States, but for the rest of the world. And in this country, if there is a real cold snap, the next cold snap, there will be natural gas shortages. So that affects agriculture. It affects electric generation because a lot of natural gas is used for heat, transferring it into electricity first, but we have the possibility of these events or flashpoints hitting us. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know when, but they are certain. It's only a matter of time.
Right.
So the whole picture of where are we at with peak oil, once again, focusing on the moment or this year really isn't the right approach because it falls prey to the idea that, the peak oil people were exaggerating.
Hasn't happened yet.
Yeah,
so.
When we step back a moment and look at the trends, It is happening. It will happen. And we have to start taking action now.
Fundamentally, ladies and gentlemen, there's clearly something happening here with global oil supply and demand and this issue of peak oil, and inexorably tied to the issues of climate change, global warming, and I implore you to learn more about it. Just check in. Just know it and do not shove this under the rug. And, Jen, where do people go to read your latest article and connect in as best they can on the topics of peak oil and climate change?
Well, there are a number of good organizations and publications out there. We try to steer people to them when it's relevant, and we link to these groups and individuals. Culturechange.org is the simplest thing I can say for people to see what we're offering and the links that we have, the topics and organizations we've featured in the past. One of them that we haven't talked about this hour is coal. And in my travels after the D.C. Petrocollapse conference, I went around southern Appalachia and I visited eco-villages, but I also checked out mountaintop removal for coal mining in Virginia and West Virginia. And that's a horrendous thing. I don't know if anyone can picture how devastating and scary and depressing it is to be on a where a former mountain was and see the destruction involved.
Mm.
The coal companies are getting coal out of the ground that way. It's low labor. It's cheap, but they're doing a lot of blasting. 800,000 square miles in West Virginia have been subject to mountaintop removal. 1,200 miles of stream have been plugged up by the rock and debris that results. Sludge dams of coal waste and toxics have been accumulating. Poisons have been injected into coal mine shafts, getting into the groundwater. People there are really suffering. So there needs to be something like a Stop Coal Coalition.
Yeah.
To deal with it.
I'd love to talk a little bit more about the broader. I'd like to do a show where we talk more about different energy sources and different alternatives for the future beyond peak oil. We will have on the show in 2 weeks from today, I just want to announce to our listeners, I'll be doing an interview with Helen Caldicott speaking about nuclear power not being the answer. She's wonderful, and I'm looking forward to that, and just really more getting into understanding this energy issue and what's facing us all as we go forward in time. You've been listening to Reality Sandwich on 89.5 KPOO San Francisco. Every Thursday at noon, we serve a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, the body, and our planet. We've been speaking today with oil industry expert and editor of culturechange.org, Jan Lundberg, and Reality Sandwich co-host, who pops in off the train every once in a while to chat with us here at the Reality Sandwich Studios at KPOO. Thanks for being on today, John.
Thank you, Martin. It was a pleasure.
You can hear this show or any past episode of Reality Sandwich at realitysandwichradio.com. We're on every Thursday at noon. I'm Martin Matthews, a certified medical hypnotherapist and healthful living advocate with Healthful Living, and you can hear me at realitysandwichradio.com. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week. You've been listening to Reality Sandwich on 89.5 KPOO, San Francisco. This show and any past shows of Reality Sandwich are available for free download at realitysandwichradio.com, where you can also read about upcoming shows. To learn more about Julie Matthews or Martin Matthews, go to healthfulliving.org. Thanks for listening.